Steve, thank you so much. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy, and it's Monday, and we're thrilled to be here. Enjoy yourselves. Call in, 312-981-7200.
That's
enjoy
good advice.
Enjoy yourselves and call in. They're not mutually exclusive. You can do both.
Did you have a lovely Valentine's Day? Valentine's Day?
Yes, we did. It's a day of love, Wendy. You know that. It starts out with love and it ends with love. It's a love fest.
You know, I was listening to Frank Fontana on the way home from our love fest at 11 City Diner because I had a craving for deli.
That's understandable on Valentine's
Nothing
Day.
Nothing says love like pastrami.
Yes. So true, isn't it?
And I was listening to Frank Fontana on the way home.
Are you in the Friars Club? Why would you get deli on Valentine's Day?
Bill, I got to tell you, I am of the Catholic faith. I am not Jewish. I grew up in Brookfield, not a lot of Jewish people there. I have not tasted love until I've tasted a combo pastrami and corned beef.
Absolutely.
With horseradish and a matzo ball as big as my head.
How about that? That's how they build it on the menu.
How
about that? Well, that's the traditional Valentine's Day meal.
But you know what? We don't have it. There used to be a deli in Lyons called Stein's, mm-hmm. and they had kosher corned beef. And mm-hmm. when that went away 30, 40 years ago, there's been no deli in the burbs.
Right. Well, this is your chance. This is your opening. You've always wanted to open a restaurant. What better than an authentic delicatessen?
I'm not one to open it.
You want somebody else to do it.
Yeah, I just want to go get it.
Yeah.
But I was listening to Frank Fontana on the way home, and he had a guest on who had written a book, and I don't remember what the guest's name was or the book.
Oh.
But here's what the topic was.
Yeah, you remember the topic, though.
You know, if you don't have a significant other on Valentine's Day, it could be a very depressing day. But you know what? We love other people other than our significant others.
True.
We love our family.
True.
We love our kids.
Right.
Maybe you had a significant other and they're not in the picture anymore, but you have children, you have parents, and to show your love that way.
That's what's wrong with that.
I think
that's really good. Last night, you know, it is a day built for romance. That's the Valentine's Day, but
that's what they're saying it shouldn't be. It should just be a day of love.
I guess so.
You know, you're luckier than most, Bill.
I am the luckiest boy in the world, is what I am. Terry and I had a very romantic dinner. But we included both of our daughters on a romantic dinner, and it was different. It wasn't the romantic dinner that you would expect.
Of yesteryear,
but it was still nice to have the four of us. Although, can I tell you something I saw that I found extremely disturbing? It's commonplace now. I'm not the only one who's noticed this. When you go to a restaurant, you look over at the table to your left or to your right, and you'll notice that nobody's talking to each other. Everybody's texting or playing a video game or something like that. That's a thing now. It's like people go to
a
restaurant, they don't
lot.
Talk to. I saw that at three tables primarily, but the most disturbing one was a guy and a girl who looked to be around 30, give or take a year or two, and they were on their phones for most of the time, not really talking to each other, but texting others. And then at one point during the meal, they held hands, that both their hands were outstretched towards the center of the table, and in their hands were not only their partner's hands, but also their phones. It was like they were part of the party.
Well, it's probably because the phone was on vibrate, so they could still feel it.
That is bizarre.
Isn't that the weirdest thing ever? I'm just looking at that. And then my first thought was, I should take a picture of this, but then I would have fallen into the trap of having to use my phone instead of just talk to people.
We just did selfies all weekend because it was my birthday weekend as well. We went to Chef Shangri-La in North Riverside to have Dr. Fong's.
I'm not sure. Is that a medicine or is that a drink?
It's both.
It's a medicine.
It is
and a
tropical drink. We did a little poo-poo platter and then Dr.
You feeling
Fong's.
Better now?
And we went early on Saturday.
Yeah.
I think we went around 2 or something, and we were the only people in there. And then after a couple Dr. Fong's, you walk outside, and I'm expecting, first of all, to be in Hawaii, because that's what this looked like.
Yes.
You know, a koi pond with fish.
It's, do they inside?
Oh, it's total Tiki
I'm
Central.
Going to there.
Isn't
totally.
Didn't Dr. Fong testify in the O.J. Simpson?
Yes.
I'm serious here,
he
right?
He did. I think he did.
In the O.J. Simpson case.
Yep.
But this place has been open since the 60s. I mean, it's really...
Really?
Oh,
I love
it
places
is,
like that.
It is amazing. So when we walked outside, we expected to be in Hawaii. We weren't. And then we were surprised that it was daylight still.
Because
we forgot we went out at 2 in the afternoon. We left at 4. It's like, wow, it's still light. This
is weird.
So
that was just lunch. That wasn't even dinner?
Yeah, no, we just, because then my son Michael played a 3-hour gig at Adele's front room, and he sang a Donovan song and mentioned his mom's birthday, so that to me was awesome. Mm. And then back to the deli yesterday for Valentine's Day, there was this couple sitting next to us, and a young couple, a guy and a girl. The girl looked much younger than he, and he was playing a video game the whole time they were sitting there, and she did not have a phone. And they were like.
So she just sat there while he played a video game?
Yeah, and I couldn't. I wanted to just stick my face in my matzo ball soup, but I had to keep looking at them because I was trying. I almost at one point said, what is the deal here?
What's in this for her? What is she getting out of that relationship?
And then on top of that, she got like some kind of fruity whipped cream waffle dish with a side of mashed potatoes. I'm telling you, it was really weird.
Wow. Now, is your husband talking to someone right now saying, yeah, I took her out, we went to the deli, and she kept watching every other table the whole meal?
No, and you know what? We weren't taking pictures of our food.
All right,
we were
good
really
news.
Trying not to, and we had, you know, we forgot it was Valentine's Day. We didn't make reservations. And so we had a nice little Bloody Mary when we got there. So we were doing selfies all weekend.
How did you get in without a reservation on
Valentine's
Day?
It was a 45-minute wait, but then you have a little... Bloody
Dr.
Mary?
Fong.
No, that was that. We were the only ones there.
I want to know more about this Dr. Fong and why he gets a drink named after
the
him.
Guy
is
who,
he famous?
He's the guy who opened this restaurant in North Riverside.
Oh, he is.
It's on Desplaines and 26th.
Oh, yeah.
It's
in
right
the
by
tropical
the Riverside
drink district.
Golf Club. It's been there. I mean, and me missed too much information. We have a waitress, and I said, how long have you been here? And she said, oh, about 35 years. And I said, because it is my birthday, and I used to come here when I was 18 and have Chi-Chi's, and now I'm 53, and I'm still coming here, but now I'm going with the Fong.
That should be your bumper sticker. You get honked at a lot. All right, let's take a quick break. We've got a lot more to discuss with you. Dr. Fong will be by later on to tell us about the tropical drinks. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder, personal friends of Dr. Fong. Mentioned his name for 10% off.
I showed you a picture of Dr. Fong.
He's a very imposing-looking man.
It's the guy who brought us Chef Shangri-La. There's a
That's
whole
the
story.
Guy.
You got to go. Here's their tropical drinks menu, Bill. You got your Dr. Fong, your Mai Tai, your Planter's Punch, Zombie, Honolulu Sunrise, Coco Loco, Pina Colada, Bird of Paradise, Flaming Virgin. This is my favorite. Come on, I wanna lay a...
I don't get it.
Freaky Tiki.
I get that. Not as often as I'd like. That looks great. You're showing me pictures of the restaurant. And
Nookie
it looks...
Nookie.
It looks, I love places where when you see them, you say, "What is this, 1968? You know,
yeah.
I love places that just refuse to change.
They haven't at all.
That's I give them high marks for that. I know you have to update the electricity and stuff from time to time.
I don't
get that.
They
may not have.
But still, like, you know, there are your own little tiki huts that you can sit in for a little romantic dinner. In the tiki bar, it's like a... thatched roof.
Oh, see, that's perfect to
1976.
Me. 1976. All right, I'm going.
Dr. Fong.
I will not go until the show's over, but I am All going. Right. There's no doubt about it. Now, speaking of phones, I have to ask, I don't know if you saw the story about Bill Murray over the weekend.
No.
Did you see this? He was at a Pro-Am golf tournament, the AT&T Pro-Am golf tournament, and not during the tournament itself, but afterwards. He's upstairs, and there's people taking pictures of him, and he did not want his picture taken. So he went and took their phones and just threw them off the roof.
He's not a nice guy.
I guess not.
I mean, I have heard so many of these stories. I've met him a couple of times, and he's crabby.
Well, you've already answered the question I was going to ask you, was do you respect him more or less knowing that he would be the type of person who would throw your phone off of a roof?
Can't you sue him for that?
Well, there's... I don't know if it's going to go to a lawsuit, but the police were involved in this. This is in Carmel, California, where they're very laid back. They should be getting there around Wednesday or Thursday. but they're trying to figure out exactly what to do.
You don't get to take other people's property.
Yeah.
You don't.
I guess not. I know part of being a celebrity is you have to play the game a little bit. So people were taking his picture. So he obviously didn't want his picture taken, and he should have just said, I'd prefer that you not take my picture right now. But he got a little more proactive, I guess.
He should be glad people are recognizing him. Really? And I'm not insulting him. Anybody who does this for a living.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that, you know, that's part of the game. That's part of the territory.
One of the mainstays, it says here, one of the mainstays of the AT&T Pro-Am golf tournament is that you get to meet great actor Bill Murray. He has an art form of goofing his way. He's made an art form of goofing his way around golf courses, including Pebble Beach, where the AT&T Pro-Am golf tournament is played. This doesn't mean that when he's off the course, he must tolerate the antics of others. TMZ reported that Bill Murray apparently became so frustrated with fans using phones to take surreptitious
very good
pictures of him at Vesuvio Restaurant in Carmel that he grabbed their phones and threw them off the second floor rooftop. The occasion was a party thrown by actor and singer Justin Timberlake, this according to TMZ.
Why was Bill Murray there?
You know, celebrities.
Oh, they, come on. They don't all just hang out, do they?
All celebrities hang out. You name a celebrity. I'll tell you if they were there.
You know, all these years I wanted to be a celebrity, and I thought it would be really cool to live in L.A. and be tan all the time and have tons of money and have a pool.
But you don't think that is?
No. This is such a surreal world.
Of course it is.
All celebrities have to hang out with each other, even if they don't like each other.
Celebrities get... In the morning, somebody slides a piece of paper under their door, and it tells them where they have to be that day.
What if you get slid under your door that you have to hang with Kevin Hart, Dane Cook?
I would hand in my membership card.
Your
SAG
card,
I wouldn't
you'd return it.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it. Commander Paul Tomasi of the Carmel Police Department told us that officers were called on Thursday, this is according to TMZ, Thursday night after reports of a disturbance at the appropriately named Vesuvio.
Erupting.
Oh, that's why. Right. I was trying to think. I was thinking of
the chicken.
The chicken with big potatoes. I'm going, did he hit him with a big potato?
That would be a story.
I hope it hadn't come to that.
I wouldn't sue. You know what? If Bill Murray took my phone and threw it away, I would sue him. But if he hit me with a giant wedge of potato.
And there's hell to pay.
No, I'd be like, you
You'd
know
be
what?
Right with
that's
that?
Funny. Yeah. Way to go, Spangler.
I hope he's listening so he knows what plan of attack. Three people claimed that their phones were taken and thrown, this according to Commander Paul Tomasi. He confirmed that Murray was the celebrity involved. Two phones were thrown off the roof. One was just lost. One was thrown but not damaged. It's not clear which brands of phones these were. I'm not sure
Doesn't matter.
Why would that matter? Why would that be a question?
Well, an iPhone would be much more expensive.
Oh, all right. I guess so.
And they're probably paying monthly. So at this point, here's your time to get a brand new phone
right.
with the iPhone Care.
Right. Courtesy
at the
of
Apple
Bill
Store.
Murray.
Yeah.
Courtesy of one Carl Spackler. Could it be that there's a phone out there that could survive being tossed that high from Bill Murray, they ask. By the time police arrived, Murray had left the scene. However, Tomasi said that Murray's representatives contacted the police on Friday. That's what I want to be. I want to be at the point where I've done something horribly wrong, and instead of me having to talk to the police, my representatives talk to the police. That's much cooler. They acknowledged that Murray was responsible for the lost phones, and the actor agreed to pay for the lost property. Now, the question that kept coming up is, maybe did Bill Murray have a Dr. Fong or two in him?
Who cares? You can't touch other people's stuff. That's their property.
Well, the owner of the restaurant where this took place says no, that he was perfectly sober. He just didn't want to be
crabby.
Bothered with the phone. He was a little on the crabby side.
And I'm sorry crabby. I said Spangler. That's not his
Carl
name.
Spackler.
Oh, that was Carl Spackler.
It's in
your
hole. That's fine. You got most of the letters. Who's going to get all the letters?
I just think I've heard so many of these stories.
Always about Bill Murray?
What about a very Murray Christmas or whatever they did? You're supposed to be happy. All the Murray brothers getting along.
Sure, I get that.
Don't take their picture. Then don't get yourself on camera.
Maybe he had...
Making movies.
Carl Spackler. I'm not here to apologize for Bill Murray, but maybe he was having a bad day. Maybe he didn't do well on the golf course. Maybe
we all have
I don't
bad
know.
Days, Bill.
Doesn't mean we can throw people's phones off of roofs.
But these are people who, I mean, you know, I know people could get intrusive sometimes.
Sure.
But you just go, hey, guys.
Sure.
Thank you. I need some private time or something just like that.
Right. All right.
That's terrible.
All right. So we have less respect now for Bill Murray. Is that what you're saying?
I do.
Slightly less respect? All right. That's fine. That's fine. Steve, if Bill Murray comes by, just warn him there's slightly less respect.
I'm gonna yell at him.
Can I tell you, I was at a Bulls game near Bill Murray a few years ago.
Yeah.
And we found ourselves lined up in the men's room together.
Yeah.
Side by side.
Cool.
I had no idea it was coming.
Don't you freaking look at me. That's what he said.
No, I turned to him and I said, do you mind if I get a picture? And he laughed.
That's really funny.
That's hysterical.
Did he let you take a picture?
No, we were in the men's room.
I know. I get it.
That's very funny. All right, we will take a quick break. Steve will give you the news, and then a lot more show coming your way. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Bill, you studied at the Second City, didn't you?
I did.
I always wanted to. I never
did. It's not too late.
You know what? It's not too late, which is interesting. And I've always wanted to make a documentary. So maybe I am going to have to go to the Harold Ramis Film School, which is part of the Second City. And look who's in the studio with us right now.
Carrie Sheehan and Jack Newell from the Harold Ramis Film School are both here. Hi, guys. Thanks for being here. Nice to see both of you.
Can Good adults morning. Go?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
For sure. In fact, the film school is an adult program. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to enroll. I have a documentary I would like to make. Why the film school?
You know, several years ago, we started to offer classes for our students to get some on-camera work, and we started to offer writing classes that were more specifically focused on television and screenwriting,
mm-hmm.
and our students just ate it up. And obviously, so many of our Second City alumni have gone on to do work both in front of and behind the camera with a tremendous amount of success. And we feel that we have a really nice secret formula to creating these types of comedic storytellers and just decided that we would like to form a full film school.
And you know, I said jokingly, oh, yeah, it's never too late. It isn't too late because a lot of times, you know, we get our career, we get our family started, and then all of a sudden we realize we forgot to do some things we kind of really liked that were maybe a hobby that we'd like to build.
Yeah, I mean, we feel like that's going to be a population that we might serve with this film school. We do think that we might get some students that are right out of high school and
sure.
applying or pre-graduate level. But also, we do believe that there's a group of people out there that finished school, started a career, maybe decided that the creative arts field was going to be too scary, but now are looking back on their career and saying, you know, maybe I don't want to do what I'm doing any longer. And I've always been interested in film. I've always been interested in television. Maybe I'll give this a try.
Talk about the connection with Harold Ramis. This is a guy who, started out at Second City, went on to do great, great things, first on television with SCTV and then later in films. How did his name get brought into the fold?
Well, we know him on camera as Egon Spengler or some
sure.
of the other characters. But I think why we like Harold, or one of the things that we're channeling from Harold Ramis' legacy is his writing and his directing abilities, and starting with Animal House, which he was a writer on,
mm-hmm.
Caddyshack, Groundhog Day, and all that. So I think when we were thinking about how do we do this, I think we liked Harold because it tells a good story. He started on the stage and then moved into the film areas, and
yeah.
I think that's a little bit about how we're looking at it sometimes. You Second City, you start on the stage, and now we're kind of moving more confidently into the film areas.
I think a lot of people didn't realize, sadly, until he passed away, when you saw the filmography and you saw the top comedies of the last 25 years, he was right at the epicenter of most of them. That's not bad.
It's great, yeah. And I think, again, another reason why he's like a, you know, why we've named the school after him. And,
yeah.
and you know, whenever we're going through curriculum and working through, like, well, okay, what are our students going to be doing for this year? We always come back to, like, kind of like a, not, I don't want to say what would Harold do, because that's, you know, weird. But, like.
But it's true,
what
isn't
Harold,
it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good thing to do, because he made smart comedies.
Yes.
That had strong emotional components.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of filmmakers look up to him for those reasons. And people, audiences loved his films for those reasons, too. I think we always want to try and get our students, whether it be at Training Center or even on main stage, even though those aren't students, to play at the height of their intelligence. And Harold did that.
Sure.
And I think this film school is going to try and imbue people with that kind of approach.
Yeah, and we also have heard that Harold was just tremendous to work with. Mm-hmm. Everybody loved Harold.
Has anyone said a bad word about this guy? I'm telling you.
I don't think it's possible.
I don't either.
And he
and Bill Murray had a little bit of a rift towards the end.
How Bill Murray can be. Yeah. He can be
Harold was
crank,
trying to take a photo
cranky.
Of him on his cell phone.
He didn't allow that. Bill Murray, not a fan of that.
Don't do that.
Now, what's going to be taught if you go to the Harold Ramis Film School at Second City? Is that where it's located?
It is, yeah.
What's the focus of this?
So it's a year-long program. We're going to let 15 students in each time.
That's it. That's the top, 15. No more.
It's really important to us that it stays kind of like boutique, small, intimate. We kind of think of the 15 people as we're casting in an ensemble, so we're looking for the right 15 people that fit together in the right group. We are going to let 15 new people in every 3 or 4 months. So if you don't get into the first time, if you're applying, there are opportunities to get into another group. Yeah. And it's a year long. It's 18 class hours a week, very intense. I mean, this is like you're back in college again, or you're going to college for the first time for 1 year. They're broadly split into three categories. One is comedy theory, where you learn about great films and great television shows. And you also take improv. So our film students have to take improv classes, which is great. There's writing classes, which focus on storytelling and screenwriting.
Yeah.
And then filmmaking classes, which is exactly what it sounds like, making films and learning how to approach material from a director's standpoint.
And this is for somebody who's just totally into it. Look at this intensive training.
Do we know who the instructors are yet?
Yeah, we're building that roster right now.
Yeah, we are pulling from a variety of sources. So we are bringing in some of our top instructors from Second City that are already teaching in our improv and writing programs, but also in our broader sort of menu of TV, film, and digital courses that we've been offering for a while. And now that we've gone public with the announcement, we are really receiving a lot of interest, not just from the local community, but from people from the coasts who want to come in and teach with us.
I believe it. And how do people audition? Do you have to audition? Is there something, you're looking for a group of people, special people. You want to make sure their interest is really there and the commitment is there. How do people find out more about this?
So we have there's a website, ramisfilmschool.com, and you can access the application from that route. There's a variety of questions that we're going to be asking you and a submission of a video and maybe some of your writing material if you have done that. And as Jack mentioned, we're looking to sort of cast a very diverse group of students because we think that we're building an ensemble here and they're going to learn from one another, and it's best to do so if people come from an array of backgrounds.
What's the cost for this?
It's $15,000 for the year.
Yeah.
We have a variety of ways that we can help students if that is a big check to write initially. Yeah. Also, the family has named a scholarship in honor of Harold, the Harold Ramis Memorial Scholarship Fund. And students can access and apply for funds through that fund that could be used for our school or, any other comedic venture in their lives.
Do you know if these credits essentially would be transferable to other colleges, or is that a separate entity?
Not currently, but we are, and we can't get into like the details about this, but we're working towards in the future.
That's a good move.
But think about it. I mean, I knew when I was in sixth or seventh grade, I wanted to be on the radio. If there was like a place I could go instead of college to just focus intensively on that and come out the other end and find a gig, that's worth it. So someone who wants to do this, $15,000 sounds like a lot of money, but is it really?
Well, and what we're really hoping to do is provide a lot of access between the students in our program and industry leaders. So we've assembled a very lengthy and cool list of advisory board members that are going to serve as advisors to us, but also help to gain students access to the industry because that's really the ultimate goal.
Yep.
So every person that we've approached thus far has just said yes. So
we're just going to say no to that.
Yeah,
it's impossible to say no.
And these are some serious players, like some alums that you know from the Second City, like Steve Carell and Keegan-Michael Key.
Yeah.
The basically most of the cast of Second City Television, yeah. but also industry leaders like Doug Belgrad and Betsy Beers, who is Shonda Rhimes' producing partner. Yeah. I mean, a long list of people that we're hoping we can connect our students to.
And on the other side of the coin, we're getting some texts right now, and I don't know who it's from, but is the school hiring? Perhaps this is someone interested in being part of the teaching end of it.
They should shoot us an email.
And what's the best email address?
You can just email me. I can't believe I'm giving out my email address.
Well, don't. Isn't there like a RamusFilmSchool.com
yeah, there is.
Email? Come on. What's your phone number and your address while you're at
yeah,
it?
Exactly. Yeah, here's my Social Security number.
Mother's maiden name.
Yeah, mother's maiden name.
Go on.
It's fine. It's Jay Newell, JNEWELL at SecondCity.com. Yeah, we're always looking for teachers. We want to talk to people. If you're a student or you want to be a student, we're here to talk. We're having an open house in March to kind of talk about any of these questions one-on-one. And if you want to actually get into the building and see the new screening room that we built and the sound stage that we built and some of the classrooms that you're going to be learning in, like, come on out to that as well.
Good. When somebody's applying for this, how much experience should they have, or do you want them to have? Do you want somebody to send you a reel that they've made, or is that not necessary?
What we're looking for is for people who already have or are interested in trying to cultivate an artistic point of view.
Yeah.
We actually would love people who have no film experience.
That's
or
better.
Any experience in the arts. And yeah. also people who have experience in the arts. I mean, that when we say we were casting a diverse ensemble, it means ages, it means races, it means genders, it means yeah. experience levels. We want to kind of bring all these people together. Because one of the things that Second City does really well is it's like this incubator. It's this creative incubator. You get people in the hallways who are writers and producers
sure.
and directors and actors and improvisers, musical improv, kind of all of the above. Older people, younger people, kids. I mean, it's kind of this great kind of thing. That's, I think, what we're just trying to do with the film school as well.
And someone just sent a nice little text. I taught Harold Ramis's kids when they were young, and a nicer family would be hard to find. I really miss him.
Yeah.
Which is a sweet thing. So many nice things to be said about him. What's the website again, in case someone is interested in joining this Harold Ramis Film School or perhaps lending their hand as a teacher?
RamusFilmSchool.com.
Perfect. Carrie Sheehan, Jack Newell, you guys, good luck with this venture. And I hope people who are listening that want to do it find what they're looking for. Because really, if that's something up your alley, it sounds perfect. It really does.
It makes me jealous. This is the kind of thing
I
want so badly. Really?
Come on, Bill.
All right. I want in.
And Bill, you made the best point ever. You know, we see Harold Ramis and we see Ghostbusters and all these movies, and you forget about his writing end of things and directing. We see him as an actor. You're more of a film student than most. So you forget all the things he's done on that end of it.
He was the head writer the first season for SCTV. And that's, in my opinion, that's the funniest show that's ever happened. Mm-hmm. And he was the head writer. So that just tells you how good he was. Thanks, guys. Good luck with this. This is going to be great.
Thank you.
A quick break and then more show next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. I used to see him. I think I've told you this. Harold Ramis toward the end of his life. And I had met him once or twice. And you and I interviewed him years and years ago. I would see him at the health club that I go to. And, it was one of those things. I didn't want to bother him, but I'd be working on a machine and I'd look over and one of my idols was right over there.
And he wouldn't care.
You know, I think you're right. It was always, I would just quickly say hello. I didn't want to disturb him, but you're right. There was never any indication that he didn't want to be bothered.
No, and, you know, we were talking earlier, you had a story that Bill Murray was at Mount Vesuvius Restaurant or something, or
Vesuvio.
Restaurant. Oh, okay. And people were taking pictures of him. He was at a little party with Justin Timberlake. Do we know that he was invited to that party?
It doesn't say whether or not. It just says he was there. I'm guessing he was invited.
It's I don't a see pro-am, them hanging.
No, but it's a pro-am golf tournament.
Oh, right.
So what happens is after they golf, they pick a restaurant or a club or a bar and they all show up. So that's what it looks like was the case.
And they were trying to take pictures of him and he grabbed their phone and...
But the weird thing is, like, he has a history of if he sees people doing anything, he'll photobomb them. He'll show up in their picture. So he usually has a good sense of humor about that, not over the weekend.
And see, that's where I don't think it's fair, because if you give that impression that you're going to, you're fun-loving and everything, then people are going to go, hey, there's Bill Murray. Let's take his picture. Maybe he'll do something goofy.
That's what's unpredictable.
And then he whips your phone off over the side of the banister.
I know.
But somebody texted 2630. Bill Murray really forgets where he came from. I knew him when he was working at Second City. We ate at this diner in Lincoln Park, and I paid for it. I'm glad we were friends and nothing more.
Oh.
And, you know, he didn't have a lot of money back then. We all help each other, don't we?
You're supposed to. Yeah, yeah.
But Harold Ramis was definitely more approachable.
The story I alluded to earlier when we were talking about the film school is, I guess, for several years, Bill Murray and Harold Ramis, even though they were, you know, friends for a long time prior, had some disagreements about some things, mostly the direction of some of their movies, most notably Groundhog Day. And because of that, didn't speak for a long, long time, which is sad.
Like how long?
Years and years and years.
Like double digits?
Yeah. I want to say right around there.
I don't get that.
Yeah.
It's like the Peter Cetera thing. I really, you know, you don't have to see eye to eye, but it just seems weird that it would put that much space in between you two.
Right.
And that much friction.
Well, Steve today had William Shatner on, who wrote a book about his friendship with Leonard Nimoy.
Yes.
But if you read much about their friendship, apparently they also, when Leonard Nimoy was toward the end of his life, they were not speaking at all either.
Come on. If you're not speaking to someone, I always feel like there's jealousy involved.
Right. Of some sort.
Something.
Something has created a
Because
stir.
I'm sure the Shat Man was angry that Leonard Nimoy was getting a lot more attention than he was at some point. He's not even a looker. He's got pointy eyes.
Ears.
eyes. That would be impressive.
That would have been an interesting show, too. most of the cast of Star Trek will tell you that...
Uhura?
It's not so much Nicole Nichols, but I know George Takei tells you that working with Shatner wasn't the easiest thing in the world.
Come on, look at him. I mean, and he was great. He was so, his acting was so over the top. He could have been in the OJ movie.
You're right. You're right. It was always, that style of acting.
It was so like this, and the women want me, and let's grab and kiss. He was awesome.
It's so funny, because even as a kid, when I would watch the original Star Trek when I was a kid, and I shouldn't have known this at age 6 or 7 or 8, but I'd go, boy, this guy is really acting up big.
Yeah.
I mean, he really was.
Go big or go home.
It was a sci-fi show. It was the land of make-believe, but even by those standards... Just the way he talked, and he'd move his hands in and out. While
very Shakespearean. It was like really like this actor.
No. So apparently some members of the cast felt that he was a little over the top.
Well, he was. And he, you know, wanted to be the top dog.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He was.
He was. He was a good-looking guy. I mean, and look at the longevity he's had. I mean, you got to marvel at the longevity between Star Trek and
yeah.
T.J. Hooker. And Boston Legal.
And he was on that famous Gremlin on the Wing.
The Twilight Zone episode. Right.
That's awesome.
Barbary Coast with Doug. The time I interviewed him, and I know this is bad talk show host 101, but the time I interviewed him, even though we were talking about Star Trek and things, I just wanted to talk about Barbary Coast with he and Doug McClure. And he was into that because nobody ever asks him about that. So most of the interview was us discussing... A TV show that only lasted 9 or 10 episodes.
Yeah, I don't remember that at all.
Nobody does. Just me.
And him.
Just me. Yeah, barely him. It was me more reminding
Bill,
him.
Thank you for bringing that up. It was the best of my life. The best of times.
Nobody wants to talk about Barbara Coast. It was really weird that was the way the interview went, but he was fine with it, so I was fine with it.
And yeah, I mean, they came back together. He had some beautiful things to say about Leonard Nimoy.
He did. Almost all the book is about his friendship with Leonard Nimoy. It just didn't play out to the end, unfortunately.
It is sad, Bill.
It is sad. All right, we will take a break. That's what I'm afraid your relationship with Steve Bertrand will be eventually. You guys are best
friends now. No, we're like that
now.
No.
And then
it's already happened.
Oh, all right.
I love you, Steve.
All right.
There's proof on our Facebook page.
Yes.
Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder.
Yes. There is very good proof of that.
The two that get ashes together.
Go on, try it.
I know. I'll have to think
of
something.
All right. We'll take a break. Steve with the news, then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
How much I love the Steve Miller Band.
They're very lovable. They're extremely lovable. One of America's most lovable bands. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. There's a reason we're playing this song. I'll tell you what it is now. Let's say this is hypothetical, Wendy. This is a purely hypothetical situation. Let's say you were traveling from here, Chicago, to another city, a city of your choice. Pick any city in the United States.
Seattle.
Nah, pick a different one.
Hilo, Hawaii.
All right. You're going from here to Hilo, Hawaii, and you're on a Boeing 737. And let's say, again, hypothetically, that both the pilot and the co-pilot die or something, or they're missing. Let's just say they're not in the cockpit anymore. And it's your job to go in there, into that cockpit, and save the plane. Could you do it?
Absolutely not.
According
be, not not. Plus, I'd be screaming and crying so much right. and going, "We're going down!"
Right. There's a commercial pilot, Tim Morgan, who says it's no problem. That the
right.
average person, like you, like me, like anybody, that we could, at a moment's notice, just go into that cockpit, the cockpit of a Boeing 737. And land that plane.
I doubt that.
Can I tell you something? I have times where I'll rent a car and I'll just stare at the dashboard and go, I have no idea what to do to make this car move.
Oh, my God. Especially if you have, like, we have older cars now. So then if you rent one and it's pretty brand new.
Yeah.
You have a new car now, so at least it's not as different.
Yeah.
But going from, like, an old 2007 car to, like...
It's a world of difference.
Oh, man.
It's a world of difference. And when I think about the cockpit of an airplane, and there's all kinds of gauges and odometers, and there's a circle with a line.
Oh, you don't
a
have to pay any
drawing
attention
of an
to
airplane.
That.
Like, you can't do it anymore, you know, because of terrorism. But in the old days, when you'd get on a plane, you could look off to the left and look inside the cockpit and see what that looks like.
Oh, they'd let little kids go in there. I
you
think
could sit in there back
Michael's
then.
16, and I think at one point when we went to Hawaii, the guy let him sit up there with him.
Right.
And put the captain hat on.
Yeah.
So that was
yeah, that's a bit, you
fairly
can't do that
recent.
Anymore.
No.
Not anymore.
No.
But remember just that, you would just take a quick glance in there, and you'd see the guys. There's always a pilot and a co-pilot, and if the switch is up, they click it down. And if it's down, they click it up. And
they're
you go,
just doing
I
that,
know. I know. It's just for show.
They don't... There's only like three buttons they ever press.
One guy has a clipboard and he goes, how about the L-17 meter? And they go, check. And then they just put a check mark on it. It's all for show. But I look in there and I say to myself, if there was ever a situation where they just said to me, hey, you're in seat 18C. We're having a contest. You get to fly the plane for 20 minutes. Not good. Not good.
But there are these people that would be like, oh, I'll do it. Those yeah. are the people I don't want to do it.
No.
Do you know what I mean? They're the first ones to go, oh, I could, let me give it a whirl. No, I don't
no.
want to.
Nope. So here's the article. It says, commercial pilot Tim Morgan thinks that you, the average person, could pull it off. You could land a Boeing 737. He's created a video that shows how to land the aircraft in the unlikely event that both the pilot and the co-pilot are incapacitated. You know, I'm not a religious person, but the second somebody says to me, hey, both the pilot and the co-pilot are incapacitated. Would you mind flying the plane? I become the most religious guy you've ever met.
You know, I could do it. I'm looking at the panels here. You know why I could do it?
Because
in all those movies, you have somebody at the tower.
I wouldn't know where the button was to hear that guy.
But
would you know which button to press so you could hear George Kennedy at the tower telling you how to land the plane? I wouldn't know where
that was. I would die if it was George Kennedy's voice because I would be like, that's it, we're in heaven.
You weren't here on Friday and I ran the board and we almost crashed
into
twice.
The ground?
Yes, yes. They had to clear Michigan Avenue because I was flying this plane. How would I be with a 737?
You'd find a way to get the radio.
I have no idea. Seriously. You just showed me a picture of a Boeing 737 cockpit. Would you even know which area to go to? I would just be hitting buttons at random.
Well, there's something that probably has like a breaker on, you know, like a little mouthpiece. Like
I hope
that.
So.
I don't know. That
I don't
seems
know where it is,
old.
Though. It says the good news is, here's the good news. The good news is the plane will probably have a sophisticated autopilot
yeah.
that can take care of most of the flying for you.
Can't land or take off, though.
I'm going to underline the word most.
And the two most important things, Bill, landing and taking
always.
Off, you can't do it on autopilot.
Always. Always.
Can you? Is there a pilot out there? Give us a call, 312-981-7200.
It says the bad news is uh-oh. You will still probably have to land it,
yeah.
and every aircraft cockpit is going to be different. So, well, that's not fair. So it's not
to
like
parallel park that thing is going to be a bitch.
That's your problem. I could land it, but then they go, could you park it over there by the... But no, I can't. I'm not your man.
Surely you can fly a plane to 630 and stop calling me Shirley.
So it says, because every cockpit is going to be different, you wouldn't know exactly where to look for the things that you need. That's what I'm saying. It's like that on cars. Every once in a while, I'll get in my wife's car or my daughter's car, and then I just sit in the driveway for 5 minutes going, now what?
When does the movie start?
Right. I don't know what to do.
Somebody said, all you would have to do is activate the autopilot. Yes, you can land on autopilot. I don't believe that. But I do believe this. Everything has changed now, says 630. It's all touch screens and joysticks, so no more analog dials. So this guy's probably right. It's like just operating a giant iPhone.
Well, you've seen me try to operate an all iPhone.
Right. You are not the guy to do it.
How desperate would a situation in Air be where I'm the guy? They would go with anybody. They'd go, is that infant available to fly? Yeah, bring the infant in.
Steve, are you a pilot?
Hey, yes, I am.
Hi. You can't land in...
You did. Congratulations.
I did.
Excellent.
Well, thanks.
Just so you could call us and not fly and talk on the phone at the same time?
Well, no, I'm on I-90 on the way home.
Oh, you are? Okay. All right.
All right. Can you land a plane in autopilot mode? Because I didn't think you could.
Yes, you can?
Yes. Oh,
most modern airliners have an autopilot system where you can bring the airplane down to with zero visibility, and you don't even have to see. You have to see almost nothing. And it will land the airplane right on the center line.
But all right,
and make the most beautiful landing you can imagine.
But Steve, as great a news as that is, and it is, it's fantastic news, would you know how to activate the autopilot? Because I wouldn't. Is there a giant sign, like a big arrow that points at a button that says emergency autopilot?
No.
Oh, no.
That would be the tough part, finding the right button to push. But it's probably doable for somebody that, any 14-year-old boy could probably do it.
You know what? You're right. Because they would figure out the buttons.
They've played video games since they were five.
The flight simulators, and they've all done that. You're right.
Oh, sure. So, get a teenager up there. they could land the airplane.
I've played video games too, but unless it's a frog that needs to get from this side of the road to the other side of the road, I'm no help at all. but you've never been in a situation even close to this, right? Please tell me that that's never happened where they've said, we better look at the passengers just in case there's an emergency. That's never happened.
No. Occasionally, you hear or read about a pilot that is incapacitated, and we train for that. And, early in my career, I had I landed an airplane. I was a co-pilot on an airplane where the pilot he had a blood sugar problem or something like that, and he passed out.
Oh
and
no!
So we, but it was no big deal because again, we trained for it. Every co-pilot is qualified to perfectly qualified to take off and land the airplane, and they fly every other leg.
What about the flight crew? Do they have any experience in case of an emergency? Because it doesn't seem to make sense that they would be
somebody should
trained.
Be trained, sure.
Like flight attendants, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some do. Most probably don't. But, they all have some degree of knowledge where they could probably step in a pinch and at least keep things right side up.
Steve, when I was a kid, when my parents would go on vacation, my mom would scotch tape index cards to things, and say, make sure this is turned off, make sure this is on 7. Do they do that in an airplane just in case? Are there index cards anywhere?
No,
there aren't.
No. Oh, no index cards. No sticky notes.
And I find it pretty fascinating that autopilot can land a plane. However, if there's anything going on, like you lose a tire or landing gear's messed up, that's when a pilot's going to have to jump in, correct?
Well, exactly. That's so rare. It just hardly ever happens. But I will tell you that we use the auto land capability of the airplane fairly regularly.
You do?
in there are a lot of cities around the world where fog and low visibility is a real problem, and it's a very, very useful device.
This is going to be
very accurate. Highly accurate.
It is.
I'm going to sound really stupid, which wouldn't be the first time I've done this on the radio.
Since at all on aviation. No stupid question.
All right. So you look out the window when you're a passenger and you're thinking, why do they even really have windshields? Because it's not like a pilot can see, because when you're up so high, it's not like you're going to see through the clouds to the runway. So I kind of knew that there had to be some way to get you down through the fog. And that's the autopilot.
Well, yeah, there is. Those are all those instruments that you see up in the front of the airplane. Those are all what we use to navigate and to get the airplane to the intended destination and get it on the runway. You have to have a window. You know, for anything, you know, low altitude where you're taking off or you're landing, you've got to have visibility.
Right, and even on the runway and stuff, I realize that.
Wouldn't you be scared out of your mind?
No, but I'm just saying, at some point, you're like, why do they even have a window? It's not like it's helping them when they're in the air.
Sure.
I know you need it on the ground and in low circumstances.
The other thing that helps us in the air is to look for weather. I mean, you can see thunderstorms a long, long way away out that window.
Right.
So it's pretty cool.
It comes in very, very handy.
Steve, in the old movies, there'd be a pilot and a co-pilot and then a navigator sitting behind them and sometimes right. telling them funny stories. Do they still – the navigator's a thing of the past, right? They don't have those anymore, do they?
That's correct. All the modern airplanes are designed for two pilots now. But a lot of times we carry more. On longer international flights, we'll carry as many as four pilots, depending on the length of the flight.
Oh, and just swap in and out?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Because we also have bunks on the airplanes where pilots who are not occupying the flying seats in the airplane can rest.
Where are those bunks? In the overhead?
It depends on the airplane. Some of them are in right behind the cockpit. Some of them in some airplanes are in the overhead behind the cockpit.
Get out. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, you'd never see them if you were a passenger.
That's so cool.
You would never see them.
This explains when my wife and I went to England. There, we were introduced to the two pilots at the beginning, and then like halfway through the flight, I saw one of those guys like walk past me and go in the back and take a nap. And I'm like, I'm not good with that. That guy should stick it out. He should stay up there.
You should be really good with that because you know you're allowing by having three guys on that flight, one guy is always resting. And so during a flight to England, which is about 8.5 to 9 hours from Chicago, we'll get about a little over 2 hours each in the rest seat.
That's a good
thing. Which is really a good thing. Yeah. Because when you get there after an 8 or 9 hour flight, now you're comfortable and you're well rested and you can make a safe approach and landing.
But Steve, he was wearing Paddington Bear pajamas. Should that have been kind of weird? Because I was uncomfortable with that.
I wear silk pajamas.
Oh, you do.
Myself,
all right.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, Steve, thank you for all you do and continued safe travels to you. It was really fascinating talking to you.
My pleasure. This is good talking to you.
A friend of mine used to say that for an airplane to stay up, everyone on the plane had to truly believe that it was, you know, that it's nothing weird. That's the way it goes. You go real fast and you go up in the air and it stays up there. But when you stop and think about it, something that heavy shouldn't be flying.
I know, and boats floating,
yeah.
Like those giant cruise ships.
Yeah.
It's just crazy to me.
It is. All right, a break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, we have some pilot comments because we were talking to a wonderful pilot who really put my mind at ease. I'm not very comfortable flying.
You don't fly well?
No, but I've got, you know when I got better, Bill?
Hmm.
When I flew with the kids because I didn't want them to see me be nervous.
Oh, that's a good move, I bet.
So when they were nervous, I had a friend whose dad was a pilot, and I said, oh, yeah, that's just turbulence. It's like potholes in the air, you know, no problem. And even if I was nervous, I would hide it well.
There's that scene, you've seen Say Anything, of course, right,
mm-hmm.
with John Cusack, where he explains to his girlfriend that, because she's afraid to fly, once you hear that pleasant tone that you hear, like after you take off, it takes about 30 seconds, and then you hear that bing, that's the pilot's way of saying to everybody, there's nothing to worry about. Everything's okay. I always thought that was a really nice thing.
It was. Because yeah. that's usually the bing is seatbelts. You could take them off, but yeah. now you're supposed to wear them the whole time.
Yeah.
Thank you for that pilot interview, who was just a listener, by the way. That was awesome.
Steve.
84. We should have gotten his number for future.
Although
pilot I'd be
questions.
Calling him every night.
Right. Right.
Why does this happen?
What does this do?
Why isn't there a window in the lav?
Right. Right. Because people would just sit in there the whole flight if there was.
Are you watching that Walking Dead airline one?
Yeah, the mini, yeah. the web series, yes.
That's pretty cool and scary. Yeah. So 847, thank you for that pilot interview. My daughter just landed in Brazil this morning. Great to know there were four pilots trading off.
Now, I think that's sometimes the case, that it's not always the case that they rotate pilots in and out. I think Steve even said that a lot of times they'll do that.
Yes, that is a good thing, because you wonder
right.
the fatigue that sets in, like, you know,
yeah.
do over-the-road truck drivers have a dude sitting with
There's
them?
There's always a guy sitting next to them to just take over.
Or yeah. is that why they get the lot lizard?
I don't know. I'm not sure. But think about it. In a hockey game, a guy plays 35 seconds. He's got to be spelled by another player. Could you fly a plane for 7 or 8 hours without
no.
somebody taking over for a little bit? It's impossible.
No, but you never, I mean, I guess you did think that on your long trip. I've never been on a real long trip.
Oh, it was the weirdest thing. At the beginning, you know, the pilots introduced themselves and stuff, and then.
And they always have the same accent.
Even in Great Britain, because in America, they always have a southern accent.
Yeah.
So they had a southern Great British accent.
Really?
Yeah.
I believe
it's the
everything.
Rule of the skies. That's
why.
How it's done. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll get some news for you, and then we're going to talk to Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. Stay where you are, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Go! Thanks, Ryan. It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder.
Good God, y'all.
And it's James Brown. Every week, our friend Eric Zorn comes in and picks an adjective by which he would like to be described. And this week, you are the earnest Eric Zorn, and you are.
I'm earnest.
That's fair.
Focused.
It's
right.
me, it's
serious.
Me, it's Ernest T.
Is that the same Ernest? Are you paying tribute to Ernest T. Bass?
Ernie, the son on My Three Sons, the brainy one, the one, who right. knew what the one who knew what a hypotenuse was.
Barry Livingston?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, Bill knows his real name.
Of course.
And his pant size.
And his IMDb address.
All right, now you guys are rubbing it in. Now you've gone too far.
Is he still with us, by the way, Ernie?
Barry Livingston?
Yes.
Oh, very much so.
He's still living. Still.
Very much so. I mean, is he like really vital?
His book, he wrote a book a couple years ago called The Importance of Being Ernie, which I think is one of the best book titles
That's
of all time.
Title.
Isn't that great? All right, so we lost Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia over the weekend, and all sorts of controversy is arriving because of this man's death.
It's really interesting, isn't it? The yeah. Republicans came out right away. I mean, it was an hour or so after the news broke, and Mitch McConnell said, we are not going to entertain any nominees from President Obama. It's too close to the election. We're going to wait till November because this is too important a decision to allow Obama to have a role in shaping the court for a generation while when he's on his way out the door.
Kind of makes sense.
Well, it makes sense if you are a Republican, sure. And if you look back through history, you can see that Democrats, when they've been in a similar situation, have urged them to wait. When Bush was trying to appoint federal judges, he didn't. It's unusual for there to be a Supreme Court judge, but certainly presidents are always appointing federal circuit judges. And there was this sort of informal policy in the Senate that they don't consider nominations after around June or July of the last year of a president's term, last full year.
But in this case, he's got 10 more months.
I guess that's true.
He's got 10 more months. And, you know, there's no exact historical analogy, but there are all kinds of examples where, for instance, there were justices approved in the final year of a president's term, but they were nominated in the year before. So they
right.
were approved. So, you know, you could argue it either way. The obvious point is that the Republicans don't want to let Obama appoint, because Scalia was a very important voice on this bench. He was the fifth vote, often in 5-4 decisions that tended to be conservative.
Yeah.
And so if you let President Obama appoint a more liberal or progressive judge, you're going to swing the balance of the court 5-4 in that direction. And that could last for quite a while. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is old and is a cancer survivor and is someone who everyone thought she was going to be the next one to go. This was, death was a complete surprise. Scalia was on a hunting trip. He seemed very healthy. So the question is, do you take someone who is really was the conservative leader of the court and allow a Democratic president, as he's heading out the door, to appoint a liberal that
What's the law? Because that's what it should
be. Well, the law, there is no law about the timetable. The law says, the Constitution says that the president shall appoint, and then the Senate shall advise and consent on.
Well, that's what should happen.
And that process normally takes several months. It's not the kind of thing that's
done. It depends.
Done.
It can be really quick. It's taken longer in the modern era. It used to take just a couple of days often. They would find someone, they go, oh, yeah, fine. Because it used to be seen much more as the president's prerogative. And they would just go along with it. Scalia was confirmed 98-0 when he was nominated by Reagan. So this was, but this was before Bork. If you remember, Robert Bork was nominated, and that was extremely controversial. And that was he was rejected by the Senate. It's unusual for the Senate to reject, it wasn't unprecedented, but it was unusual for the Senate to reject them in such a politicized manner for such an ideological reason that Bork was just simply too conservative for the Democrats to accept. And then if you also, I'm sure you remember the Clarence Thomas hearings, which were in the early 90s, I think it was. And Thomas, again, it was a prolonged, very right. politicized activity, and that was coming from the Democrats. They were the ones who were not saying, "Look, we're not your rubber stamp here. We want someone who is not that far out on the limb." President Obama himself, when he was a senator, really wanted to filibuster the nomination of Alito, Sam Alito. So the tradition of politicizing these appointments goes back pretty far, and so you can see. You can see why the imagine the contrary situation. What if John McCain had been elected, and we were nearing the end of his term?
Right.
Do you imagine for a second that Republicans would be saying, "No, we should wait until November. We should wait to have this." I mean, they wouldn't for a second. You know that for a second. You also know that if the situation were reversed the other way, that if a conservative president had been elected and Ruth Bader Ginsburg had died or resigned at the same time, that Democrats would be saying, "Hey, let's hold off
right.
Until the next president."
Mean Mitt Romney, by the way, not McCain, right? It would have been Mitt Romney.
Oh, would have been no. Well, it would have been the second term of McCain if he'd been elected in 2008, because he was the first guy to run against Obama. So if he were,
I just think you got to go by the rule, whatever the law says.
The rule says at this point, if you're just going by the book, the rule says that the president picks somebody in the Senate.
Then that's what you do.
And the advice and consent thing in the Senate is they didn't want. It was like a check of the president's power, so we didn't just appoint a crony or someone who, a criminal or something.
Right.
It wasn't because they wanted to place an ideological test on the nominee or check him or her for all the opinions. But of course, that was the old era. We're in a new era now where the Supreme Court is highly politicized, and I honestly can't say as I sit here that I would be arguing differently from the Republicans if I were in their seat, if I were in their position, because it's like you say, well, there's an election coming up. This is the most important thing, I think, and I've been arguing this for months now, that the Supreme Court is a really, really important aspect of a presidential election.
Sure.
And that's, you should really, really think about that because the Supreme Court is in a very delicate balance right now, and whether the Democrats win in November or whether the Republicans win, it's going to have a huge impact on a lot of issues. And you see the issues that are in front of the court right now. There's this big union case that is now kind of paralyzed. There's a big abortion case that's coming up they're supposed to hear. These are issues that are central to people's lives. Affirmative action is another big case.
Can you put some headphones on? Because Ryan Burrow has a comment.
Yeah, I was actually just down in South Carolina covering the debate, and actually Jeb Bush was asked a question in one of his Q&A sessions by someone. It was regarding abortion, but I mean, he indicated that he thought the next president, this by the way came hours before the Scalia announcement, the next president could have to replace four perhaps Supreme Court justices, and I'm surprised more people aren't talking about that right now on the campaign trail.
Well, that was before Scalia.
It was a couple hours before.
I think that number four probably figures the next president will be a two-term president, which is not an unthinkable idea. Most of our presidents in recent years, decades, have been two-term presidents.
Right.
So that number four was probably, and I'm not even sure Scalia was one of them. He was such a robust guy, but it is an old court. That's exactly right. And this should be a big issue because there's so much of the power now is vested in the Supreme Court. The future of Obamacare certainly was in the hands of the court and may still be at some point. Environmental regulations. There was just an environmental decision by the Supreme Court last week that threw a wrench into the Obama administration's plans. Immigration, the president's power. I mean, it is an enormously important institution. So I could easily make that argument that they should just wait. They should wait and see where the public is, whether the public is going to, because it looks like we're going to have a pretty far right-wing presidential candidate from the Republicans and a pretty far left-wing presidential candidate from the Democrats.
But when you say wait, you're talking about a minimum of 11 months.
Minimum, yes.
That's a long time.
Well, and remember, there's no guarantee, too, that it's going to be a Republican president, right?
Oh, not at all, yeah. And in fact, they're taking a big gamble because they're not only – there may see, right now, there's a moderating force, which is that if the Republicans in the Senate were to say, okay, we'll send somebody up, see who it is, President Obama would be motivated to try to find somebody who's a very centrist judge. Someone who is not, you know, not far out on the end, someone who maybe both parties can live with.
May I suggest Judge Reinhold to you?
You may.
Oh,
you
my gosh.
Judge Judy.
Judge Judy is very strong.
I thought she was already on it. That study said that most people think Judge Judy's.
Is that true?
That's yeah. Sad.
But yeah. There's a lot of thought that says that the Democrats may take the Senate, which is a big gamble by the Republicans, because if they win the White House and the Senate, who knows who President Sanders or a Clinton.
Things just got real.
Yeah, it just got real.
It could happen in Illinois, right? We could see with Mark Kirk's position.
Oh.
Tammy Duckworth, right? He's running against Kirk.
That could... let's discuss this further in just a little bit. If you'd like to jump in, 312-981-7200. I know we have some callers on hold. Stay there. We'll do our best to get to you next. It's Bill and Wendy along with Eric Zorn on WGN. It's Bill Effen, it's Wendy Snyder, along with Eric Zorn.
The earnest
columnist for your Chicago Tribune. People are calling in and texting in at 312-981-7200. We're talking about Antonin Scalia. In my opinion, the coolest guy named Antonin anywhere.
What's with the Antonin?
I like Antonin.
Antonino, I could see. Yeah. Antoine.
Yeah.
Antonin.
His friends called him Nino, apparently.
Yeah.
So you could call him Nino.
I called him Ant-Man. That's my nickname.
Mary has called us at 312-981-7200, and some different theories out there. What is yours?
I would very much like to see President Obama be on the Supreme Court. Is it possible for him to resign the presidency at this point? Have Mr. Biden, that would then become the president, and Mr. Biden could appoint him to the Supreme Court. Would he want that? Is that possible? Would he be... would the Senate approve him? Can you give me some advice? Because you guys are good, and I've been wondering about this for all weekend.
Thank you, Mary.
Thanks, Mary.
We ask that you hang up and listen for your answer because your phone is kind of crackly. So
that would be a black mark on his presidency for him to resign to become a Senator.
I think the Republicans would have a fit.
Yeah.
If he tried that, because it would call for him, just to rephrase her scheme, is Obama says, I resign, and the new president, Joe Biden, says, and I appoint you to the Supreme Court. The Republican Senate has already said they're not going to go along with anybody Obama appoints. Do you think they're going to go along with Obama? I think he realized...
he didn't appoint himself.
Unless somehow they work out a backroom deal for that to happen. And the other question is, would Obama want that? I can't imagine...
You don't resign the presidency, for gosh sakes.
But he's got 11 months to go, and he realizes that he's probably not going to get a whole lot more done in the last 11 months. And for a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court, if the Democrats could all get together and do it, that might be a fun thing for him to do. He might enjoy that. I mean, it's a great job it would be to be a lifetime appointment to the U.S. Supreme Court.
William Howard Taft was the president who was put on the Supreme Court, correct?
But he didn't resign his presidency. That happened years later, right?
No, you're right. It was later.
11 months is a long time. People keep saying it. No matter what your job is, if they gave you notice or you gave your employer notice that you were leaving in 11 months, you wouldn't be allowed
Good
to
point.
Just sit there.
You're right.
There's still tons of things to do in 11 months.
There are things to do, I don't think he's going to resign otherwise. I don't think there's any possibility of this theory. I mean, there are other theories that are out there that say, like, well, the Democrats might say, well, look, we will appoint a moderate Democratic senator. And then we'll basically give that Senate seat to you, Republicans, so that you have a much better chance of holding on to the Senate, and therefore you could approve. I don't buy that either, because I think the Republicans are just – they're taking their chances here. They're saying, okay, we think that a Republican is going to be elected president, and we think that this issue is going to play well for us in the election. I don't know that that's going to happen. I think that the idea, especially if President Obama nominates someone who's an attractive – judge. There are a number of names that are floating out there. If you say a Hispanic or an African American, Loretta Lynch, Attorney General. She got an incredible pedigree. Say, okay, we're going to nominate her for the Supreme Court. We're going to watch the Republicans, all these white guys up there saying, no, we're not going to vote for her. I don't know that that plays very well to the electorate, especially if Wendy has a common sense viewpoint, which is like, hey, it's your job. You've got to give her a hearing. You've got to give us a reason if you're going to reject her, not just because she's not Antonin Scalia. So I could see President Obama putting somebody up, knowing that he or she is not going to be probably confirmed, but that being a real wedge issue. If the Democrats win the presidency, which I still think the odds are good that they will, because I think the way the electoral map lays out, it's very favorable to the Democrats.
In our mock election, Hillary won.
Well, there you go. I mean, we might as well call off the election then. And also the Senate, the Republic. If you remember last time, the Democrats were defending a lot of incumbent seats in the Senate. This time it's the Republicans that are defending most of the seats.
Yeah.
Meaning that the chances of a four-seat swing to give it back to the Democrats is pretty high. And especially if you've got the some enthusiasm from the voters, if they're ginned up, it's a real crapshoot. The Republicans figure, well, if we win the White House and we hang on to the Senate, then we can get a much more conservative judge in there. But
how did Scalia die? Because they say he was found dead. Now, I need more information.
I think they're not performing an autopsy, was the last I heard.
Read the story. There's a couple of accounts of a story about the Presidio County judge named Cinderella Guevara, who pronounced him dead over the phone, which is not the normal way you pronounce somebody dead, but they explained to Cinderella Guevara what they were seeing in Scalia's bedroom, and then the pronouncement was made over the phone, and they were trying to decide heart attack or natural causes, and it kept going back and forth.
Well, heart attack is a natural cause, isn't it? I mean, isn't natural causes distinct from homicide?
Wasn't he
suspicious?
Hunting though? Is there?
He was on a hunting trip.
But no,
he
would. But
lodge
he would.
Anyway.
But he. But oh. He would. No, he was in his hotel room. He didn't come down for breakfast.
Yeah. That's,
so I mean, as far as I have heard, no what credible speculation that there was any foul play involved.
Or, no one's saying foul play. They just thought a lot of people thought it was a little unusual for somebody over the phone. I guess that's very, very uncommon for you to say somebody over the phone, here's what I'm looking at, and then they pronounce you dead. Normally,
you would think they would be a little more safe. Like, just hold up the phone. I don't hear him breathing. Okay,
right. Good. Okay, that person's no longer with us.
Yes. Send a selfie of you standing over the body. Well, could he have had a gun in his room?
Oh, no, I think.
No.
There's no suggestion of that at all.
Okay.
It's just.
Well, it's found dead is not enough for me.
Yeah, well, originally they said natural causes. It was changed to heart attack and then flipped back to natural causes. And this Cinderella Guevara.
Cindy?
I've never heard of anyone, aside from your Disney princesses, with that name. But they were apologizing, saying this probably could have been handled a little bit better. But
you think?
I think so. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's out in a very remote place, right? And I remember reading somewhere that this is actually not all that uncommon. That what is Cinderella's actual title?
Presidio County Judge Cinderella Guevara.
Judge.
Yeah.
So a judge has to pronounce someone dead? That seems pretty weird to me.
Yeah, I would think a coroner's job would be to do that.
Yeah.
Right?
Or an EMT
or
someone with some...
Yes.
But no,
a governing body of Disney princesses would all get together and maybe Belle would say, let's give it a little more time.
I mean, it's very sad. I didn't agree with a lot of what Scalia said. He was a very interesting, entertaining, powerful writer. He had 9 kids, grandkids. I mean, it's a sad thing when someone dies,
Sure.
And, professor here in Chicago.
Yeah. I mean, he was... He was someone who is extremely influential as a conservative thinker and judge, and he doesn't have a ton of majority opinions that have his name on them, but a lot of his minority opinions are so colorful and so interestingly reasoned that people say that he's going to have a really long impact on lawyers and judges going forward, because everyone loves to read his opinions and loves to get into how he thinks.
Sure, absolutely. Eric, thank you. Have a great rest of the week. We'll see you a week from today.
Great.
It's Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. We'll check in with Steve next to find out what's on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. And it is, what, February? What is today's date?
Let's go with the 15th.
Is it really?
One day after Valentine's Day, Wendy.
And it's Black History Month. And we thought a great guest to have on would be someone to talk about the topic of race. We have kids, both you and I do, not together. They have different parents.
I know. I looked at the test results just to make sure that.
It's never too late. You know, you have kids that will say, oh, there's this kid in my class. He has brown skin or something. It comes up, and we want to find out the right way to do it. So on the line with us right now is Dr. Jean Robbins. Dr. Robbins, how are you doing today?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
We're doing really well. You're the head of early childhood development at Catherine Cook School in Old Town. And I got to tell you, kids today really don't have any issues with race. They really don't. It's like they'll just talk, oh, this kid in my class. And I think it's come a long way, don't you?
Well, in some ways, yes, and in some ways, no. And I think, really, children take their cues from the adults around them. And to the extent that adults have a difficult time talking about race, children get messages from that, hesitation that adults have. So we start here at Catherine Cook right in preschool at 3 years old, talking about issues of race and other differences with children. A lot of times it comes through the literature we choose, the books that they read in the class that may talk about an African-American character or a family that has a different structure. Maybe there's a book about a family with two dads or two moms. So we start early here.
And that's a good thing, isn't it?
It's really good because we really, children are starting to really, really build their vocabulary at 3 years old, and they're really curious, and they're assigning names to the things in their world. And so having language for race is really, really important for them. A lot of parents will get really nervous when their three-year-old screams out, oh, my God, why is that person's skin so black? I think that it feels embarrassing because we're not used to talking about that sort of thing. And I think for white parents, that can be particularly difficult. But I think just gaining the courage and the practice to see that as normal for children, they're noticing differences.
Well, yeah,
they're
people have different skin colors.
And interesting to see something different. So parents can explain.
Dr. Robbins, who has the hardest time adapting and realizing that it's not a bad thing to discuss this? Is there one race or one culture that has a harder time adapting, or is everybody kind of the same?
I do think black parents talk to their children about race a lot more.
Do they, yeah?
They feel they have to.
Yeah.
And as a black person myself, I certainly had to because we have to explain why children are being treated differently.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And, if we could just take it for our kids and learn from it, because, yes, the races are treated differently, but not in the eyes of children. And in my experience with my kids, they'll ask questions and, can you necessarily say the wrong thing?
I think saying the wrong thing is just being silent. I think people are entitled to their opinions. We certainly all have experiences. And, having an experience is not right or wrong. It's just an experience. And how we interpret it may be clear-headed or not. But I think the important thing is to just have an openness to talking about everyone's history and everyone's identity.
When there's a big case, like we've had cases of white law enforcement and black perpetrators that have not gone well, do you address that with kids in school or is that better left at home?
We really encourage parents to talk about it, and it's been addressed in different ways with the different age groups at our school. When the news of the Laquan McDonald case broke around you know, just before Thanksgiving time,
yeah.
our faculty got together to talk about what are we going to do when this comes up in school, because we knew it would definitely come up with the availability of that video jumping out everywhere.
Yeah.
So the early childhood teachers, the people who teach up to kindergarten level, decided they were not going to introduce the topic. They would wait to see if a child brought it up, because mm-hmm. we knew a lot of the parents are protecting their children from the, you know, that kind of video is extremely disturbing to young children. Well, to anyone, really, yeah. but young children should not be viewing that kind of violence. Lower school, around fourth grade, they did raise the topic in a very gentle way. And in middle school, they had lots and lots of conversation about it openly. And many of those kids had seen the video.
Something I want to ask you too, Dr. Robbins, if kids ask you a question and you're not quite sure of the answer, for instance, how do you celebrate Kwanzaa? What does that mean? Is it okay to say, you know what? I don't know. Let's go to the library and find something out about this and make it a little history lesson.
I think that's a brilliant answer, because not only are you being vulnerable and offering an opportunity to your child, you're modeling how to be a learner, and that you can be a learner for your entire life. It's a really, really exciting thing. You know, one of the things I am probably the most concerned about in our society is that people feel they have to know everything and they want to be right about everything. Well, we need to be much more willing to ask questions and not feel that we, you know, have the truth locked up tight.
Dr. Robbins, if one of the kids were to say to you, will we ever be equal? Will there ever be a time in our lives where we're all equal? What would you say to them?
I would say, I don't know. And let's think about ourselves. What we usually do with younger children is bring it back to their level.
Yeah.
And, you know, these topics of fairness are extremely salient for young children, because that's what their lives are all about, fairness and sharing. And, you know, sharing is tough for little kids, but it's also tough for big kids and
right.
adults. So we ask them questions like, do you think that it'll ever be, you know, you will always play with the person you want to play with at recess? And as they begin to see these issues in their own context, it really, really changes the conversation.
Somebody has just texted us, 630, when my son was 5 years old, we were in a store and I told him to get something next to a black man. He said he only saw a green man. The mom was puzzled and said, what do you mean? And the kid said, his shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, people do notice different things, that's for sure.
Yes, they do.
And kids are so honest about it, too, which to me is kind of refreshing. I don't think there's any negativity or meanness. They just have questions.
They just have questions. But let me tell you, the way young children learn is by watching. They are so attuned to their parents that they don't just pay attention to what you say, because I can tell you they don't understand a lot of the words you say, but they do understand your body language, your facial expressions. So parents need to understand that their attitudes come through loud and clear to young children. And while they may not have the vocabulary to talk about these attitudes, they definitely do begin to pick up on the, you know, the power differentials between people, and kids know who's in charge. Very, very young children do know who's in charge and who has the power. So
we're talking to Dr. Jean Robbins. It is Black History Month, and really every month should be Black History Month, and we should learn about it. And what do we tell our kids? It's Black History Month. It is February, and we have Dr. Jean Robbins on the line with us, head of early childhood development at Catherine Cook School here in Old Town. And we are talking about when is it a good time to talk to our children about races, different cultures, different genders. And Dr. Robbins, we have a listener who has a question for you, and I think you're the perfect person to answer it.
All right.
Linda, you had a question for Dr. Robbins.
Yes, I'm just curious for myself as a mother and as a grandmother, if there's a biracial couple, I guess it doesn't matter to me if it's a white mother or a African-American father, how do you classify somebody as white versus black if you consider the president of the United States an African-American, but he's from a biracial family?
Oh, what a fascinating question. And I could probably talk about that for an hour, but I'll try to, like, really tear it down a little bit. In our country, the way we establish the race of somebody happened about 150 years ago. It is called the one-drop rule, so that if you have one drop of black blood, you are automatically categorized as a black person. Now, I can imagine that you can see how problematic that is, because there are many, many people who have black blood that don't even know it. I think what I really want to get across in this answer, though, is that race is a made-up categorization. It doesn't have any really basis in our abilities, our capacities. There are a few tiny pieces of DNA that have to do with the melanin in our skin and our hair follicles and how they're shaped. And these only have to do with our looks. They have nothing to do with, you know, how we express ourselves or anything else. Those things are purely our culture and how we get shaped by our experiences. So we would categorize a child of a biracial couple as a black child, but now we have the choice of saying mixed race on some application and, you know, applications in some other forms. I think this is an enormous conversation that has really given us an understanding of how complex these issues are.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Dr. Robbins, I'm guessing you're familiar with Danny DeVito, right? You know who Danny DeVito is?
I think so. Right. Is he a short actor?
He is. All right. Well, Danny DeVito was asked, this was after the Academy Awards controversy where there weren't any nominees of color, and they asked him about it. And he said, here's a quote from Danny DeVito, "It's unfortunate that the entire country is a racist country." And that hurt my feelings, because I don't consider myself a racist, and I know plenty of people who aren't. You don't think of our country as being a racist country, do you?
You know, I think that word has become really, really misunderstood. Being a racist is not a personal choice. I think the people in the United States are good people. And I think that having white skin gives you certain benefits that are not universally available to black people.
Yeah.
And if people can look at you and tell there's something different about you, and they begin making assumptions about you based on things that really don't have anything to do with you,
right,
that's what racism is. It is not, you don't choose to do something negative to somebody and become a racist that way. So, I mean, I think those kinds of comments are really, really designed to make a lot of people feel bad. It's not, I would not call people racists who just don't understand that they have benefits that others don't. But anyway, does that help?
Oh, yeah, very much.
Just be kind to one another. I mean, wouldn't that be a way
to
do it?
That'd be all right, yeah.
It's being kind, but it's also opening our eyes to see that a lot of people are being kept out of the mainstream of society, and not because they're not, you know, not because they're making poor choices, but because there are some assumptions about black people that just are baseless and untrue.
Yep. Yep.
You know, our whole education system is designed to, in some ways, keep the, you know, keep people at, keep people out
mm-hmm.
of the economy. So, anyway, it, you know, there are lots and lots of debates around here, even in a school, a very, very wonderful independent school about these very topics. So.
And do you have a website or somewhere where we can go to find out more about this? Because this is really fascinating. We have a lot more calls that, unfortunately, we don't have time to get to right now. Dr. Jean Robbins, she is the head of early childhood development at Catherine Cook School in Old Town. Any website or informational place you can send us?
Yes. Our website is www.catherinecookschool.org.
Thank you so much. A pleasure talking to you today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Dr. Robbins. Appreciate it. All right, we will take a quick break. We'll get some news from Steve and then more show coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
My dead drunk friends.
Guess what this song is called?
Is it called My Dead Drunk Friends? Is it?
Yes,
yeah.
It is. The Hollywood Vampires supergroup made up of Johnny Depp, Alice Cooper, Joe Perry from Aerosmith are going to pay a tribute to the late, great Lemmy from Motorhead at the Grammy Awards.
Was that Johnny Depp singing there? Was that his vocals?
I think it sounds like Alice Cooper singing.
Yeah, I thought so too, maybe.
But if you saw the picture, you've got Joe Perry looking good. You've got Alice Cooper with his makeup like usual. And Johnny Depp, kind of a combination of Jack Sparrow and... Who else would it be? What other character has he played that
It's a combination of every character he's ever played in a movie. He just took something from Willy Wonka.
Yeah, he did.
Something from Chocolat.
So this is confirmed. They're going to do a tribute to Lemmy from Motorhead and David Bowie and Glenn Frey. And they started this band as a means to toast to our dead drunk friends.
Mm. That in memoriam section of the Grammys tonight is going to go on for 45 minutes because we've lost so many musicians in the last couple of weeks.
The Grammys have also announced Lady Gaga is going to pay tribute to David Bowie.
Oh, that'll be nice.
That's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Chris Stapleton will team up with previous winners Gary Clark Jr. and Bonnie Raitt to honor B.B. King.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see who's going to do for Glenn Frey.
I heard it earlier today.
Was
and
it
I don't
Bob Seger?
No.
They were pretty tight.
I want to say Jackson Browne.
Oh, yeah.
I'm almost positive that Jackson Browne will sit in with other members of the Eagles. Like 95% sure.
That's tonight?
Yeah, the Grammys are tonight.
There's too much on tonight.
There's a lot going on.
You got your Grammys. You got your X-Files.
Better Call Saul is tonight.
Yes.
It's too much. Because of the Grammys and here's what I found. These are all artists that you thought probably have won a Grammy at some point in their illustrious careers, but you would be incorrect. These people have not won Grammy Awards. Now, Snoop Dogg has been nominated 17 times.
For music or weed?
It doesn't say. Probably both.
He makes me laugh. I'm sorry. He really does.
I don't understand what he's talking about. Sometimes he comes on and he says that schnizzle my dwizzle stuff, and I don't know if it's dirty or funny. I don't know what it is. He says that all the time. It's zizzle my fnizzle, and then people call him a genius. 17 nominations, not a single award yet for Snoop Dogg.
Really?
So, and I don't know that he's nominated for anything this year. He was napping. He gets tired very easily. Brian McKnight has been nominated 16 times.
Who is he?
I'm not that familiar with the work of Brian McKnight. It says you might expect, let's see, he's done favorites like the song Anytime, which I'm not really familiar with.
American R&B singer-songwriter.
Yeah. I guess I should know. He's been nominated 16 times. I wish I knew more about him, but I've heard the name, but I'm not really that familiar with his work. He lost the R&B album last time to TLC's fan. The last time he was nominated for R&B album was in 2000 when he lost to TLC. So he's been doing this a long time, obviously, 16 nominations. Joe Satriani,
love
a music
him.
Mainstay.
He is so good.
15 nominations, never won.
Really?
After, yeah. Yeah. And he's highly regarded in the music business. I'm shocked that he's never won an award for anything.
He's a shredder.
He is a shredder. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle fans will understand that. Bjork, our friend Bjork, has been nominated 14 times and has never won a Grammy Award.
She had one song that I liked.
What was her song? She was with the Sugar Cubes originally,
right,
and then branched
from
out
Iceland?
On her own. They are from Iceland. And we met her one time. Remember, she came up to the studio and we talked.
It was
like an episode of Battlestar Galactica.
It was very weird.
I know.
Yeah, it's a kick.
Remember she said that?
She was pretty adorable. And remember the swan dress she wore?
She wore a swan dress, yeah. I just remember when we were interviewing her, you would ask her a question, like ask Bjork any question.
So Bjork, who are some of the people that led you into the music world?
Oh, music, yeah, those can hear me.
And you and I would look at each other like, what?
Any
what
idols that you have?
Oh, yeah, those idols, so good, yeah.
It was, remember that Jodie Foster movie where she spoke a language that no one else spoke? That's when we talked to Bjork, and then it was done.
Bjork.
We said, you got to come back. We want you to come back, Bjork.
What was her big darn hit that I just loved? She's 50 years old.
Is she 50?
We're getting older.
She looks both older than that and younger than that at the same time.
Yeah, you're right.
I can't explain it.
Born in Iceland.
Kate, I do remember her last name, and it's not down here. I'm not cheating. Do you remember Bjork's last name? Because you and I were trying to figure out the derivation of this. It was Gudmundsdottir. You know, like a lot of times people will have son at the end of their name,
mm-hmm,
because from a long time ago, Johnson, that guy was obviously John's son. But I guess in Iceland, it's common to end the name with Dottir because you are someone's daughter.
Dottir, I'll give
is
it to
IR?
You, but you're right.
Is
what,
it
say
Gudmundsdottir? Is that how you say it? Isn't that right? It is right, right?
It's, yes, I think that's how you would...
Her mom is Godsman. Katy Perry has been nominated 13 times and has yet to win a Grammy Award.
I'm surprised she hasn't won.
She should win for something.
I've become a fan of hers.
Yeah, I like her too. Nas has been nominated 11 times, has never won. Busta Rhymes.
I'm shocked.
Who has been nominated 11 times, has never won. Neither has Shonda Rhimes ever won a Grammy Award, by the way. Is there some sort of a... Are they holding back on the Rhimeses?
I don't know, but I have to tell you, I am so unhip because, seriously, I don't know half these people. I mean, the Grammy Awards used to be something I would watch religiously. I loved music, and now I don't feel
don't
like I know
them at
anybody.
All anymore?
I recaps.
What about Nicki Minaj, Wendy? 10 nominations, has yet to win.
Are they going to show the In Memoriam film on her butt?
Yes. They've decided.
They don't need a screen.
They've decided to do that tonight. Now will you watch?
Yes.
And her butt is now in HD, I understand.
Always has been.
So that'll be fun. Put your 3D glasses on and take that in. Tupac Shakur, 7 nominations, yet to win. He will not win a Grammy Award. Well, you and I know that, but there's people who say that he is not dead, that he's just laying low. And he is. Public Enemy. Public Enemy has not won a Grammy Award despite 5 nominations. Now, here's a band. This is one of the most underrated bands of all time, in my opinion.
Let's hear this.
And I'm the host of Rock Tracks.
I know.
I've hosted Rock Tracks now for 14 years. So
and
I know
who's been
little...
the host every... I mean, who's been your musical guest every time?
Well, I don't know every time, but this weekend we have Boz Scaggs coming by to say hello. Would you like to hear that? That's
yes.
going to be on this weekend. Boz Scaggs on Rock Tracks with me. Depeche Mode.
Love them.
Aren't they fantastic?
You like that techno music.
Love those guys. Love those guys.
I'm a big fan of Depeche Mode.
Mode is great, and their offshoot band, A La Mode, also very talented. They have kind of an ice creamy sound.
Can I leave early?
Depeche Mode has been nominated 5 times, and as you guessed it, have never walked away with the Grammy trophy. What's wrong? Why can't Depeche Mode get a little
love? People are people, Bill.
Yeah, I know. Well, why could it be?
Enjoy the silence.
The Notorious B.I.G. has not won a Grammy Award despite 4 nominations. Guns N' Roses, 3 nominations, has never won.
That surprises me.
It seems like they're always there. Every time I've ever seen a Grammy Award, Axl Rose goes up on stage and sings something. He's in the room. You might as well give him a trophy. I think they just go hoping there'll be a mistake. Somebody doesn't show up. Timberlake didn't show. We're here. Come on. We'll take a trophy. Oasis. They would just fight over it.
Yeah.
They would win, and then they'd hit each other on the way to the stage.
Aren't you surprised they haven't won, though? I mean, they're not doing anything now, are they?
No, it's been a while.
Liam and Noel Gallagher?
Yeah. In the history of rock, and you get your bandmates that don't always get along, those guys, despite being brothers, just didn't see eye to eye on anything.
Sibling rivalry.
Justin Bieber.
Really? He hasn't won?
No. Well, he's only been, I mean, what's it been, 4 or 5 years for him?
Yeah, but it's not Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
No,
it's album sales.
I know. Well,
or problems.
Is it album sales or is it to recognize achievements in rock and roll? Do they go by sales? I don't think they go by sales. I think they go by, they want the best song and the best album. That's what they want. I don't think they're going by sales. I don't think. Patti Smith, 2 nominations, no victories. Here's another one that I'm very upset about. Journey, love Journey. Only nominated 1 time for Don't Stop Believin'. That's their only nomination ever for Journey.
Thanks to the White Sox.
Actually, they say here in the article that it's because of the Sopranos season finale or series finale,
yeah.
But that's not true. They
no,
were nominated way, way, way before that. But how did they only come away with 1 nomination ever? Journey? Kiss, 1 nomination, did not win.
Don't deserve to win.
They, you're still holding a grudge because they wouldn't let you be the cat? Come on, let Wendy be the cat, Kiss. They were nominated for Psycho Circus and did not win. Morrissey, the upbeat musical tones of Morrissey, nominated once, did not win. That's it for Morrissey? He was never nominated more than that? The Kinks, Wendy. Now, this
is
sad.
That is a travesty.
A bigger travesty. Never nominated for a Grammy Award. They never won because they were never nominated. The Kinks. Ray Davies and the Kinks.
That's terrible.
How can that be? Now, let me balance things out. The Spice Girls were also never nominated and never won.
There is a God. Can we take a quick break? And can
sure.
I tell you, the only category I know people in is for Best Traditional Pop Vocal Album.
That's all?
And you will know everyone in this category, too.
All right. Some Grammy talk. If you'd like to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's the 58th Annual Grammy Awards this evening. Bjork?
This is Bjork.
Bjork, how are things going with you?
Oh, good. He's only audience.
Hey, Mark, did you have a question for Bjork?
Yes, I wanted to jump in and say if the singer Bjork married the tennis great Bjorn Borg, she'd be Bjork Borg.
It sounds like a Muppets character saying something to us, doesn't it?
Bet in the Swedish chef for a three-way, it gets kind of...
Wow. All right, you just provided nightmares for all of us. Thank you, Mark. That's
Thank
beautiful.
You, Mark. Hey, Bjork, why don't you tell Mark what your name
Mark
would be?
Mark, he's doing the bird signing tool in the
I can't believe how good you are.
You'd ask her a question, and she'd answer, and we'd look at each other. I'd ask her a question, and she'd answer, and then we did at the end. We said, you have got to come back, but she never came back.
She didn't. Hi, Bernie.
Wendy.
Grammy talk.
How you doing, Wendy? Hey, I got one for you. How about Leonard Skinner's never been nominated or awarded a Grammy?
What's with that?
That's crazy.
That is crazy. I'm sorry. I'm
they
a huge.
Sold over 35 million albums and never been nominated.
So how does that work with the Grammys?
I don't know.
It's like with any award show, with the Academy Awards, with the Emmys, they get, you know, five nominees in each category, and if you're not lucky enough to be one,
then who
you're
votes
out of luck.
For it?
Well, the crazy thing is, all the new country actors, most of them take their anything they've learned off of the old Skinner. I mean, they're
sure.
Most of them are a ripoff of the old Skinner, honestly. And the fact that they've never been nominated is an absolute sin.
Doesn't make sense.
Are they in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Well, the number three song of all time, is, as far as rock, is considered Freebird. And how the heck did they not get nominated?
And I have to tell you, that's really not the best song they've ever done.
No, not even close.
Big Skynyrd fan. Thank you, Bernie. Kelly Clarkson is best pop solo performance. Ed Sheeran.
That's this year you're talking about, right? Yeah.
Isn't he an actor?
No, Ed Sheeran? No.
Who am I thinking of? I don't know.
Ed Harris. Thinking of Ed Harris?
Taylor Swift is up for Blank Space. And the only people that I know some for best pop duo, Florence and the Machine, Maroon 5.
Those, Florence and the Machine are really good. I'd love to see them win something.
Wiz Khalifa.
Yeah.
Best traditional pop vocal album. Okay. Best traditional pop vocal album. To me, that's all gobbledygook.
It's a long title.
Tony Bennett is up there and Bill Charlap.
Uh-huh. Together or separately?
Together.
Yeah.
Bob Dylan for Shadows in the Night. Mm-hmm. Josh Groban. Seth MacFarlane.
Seth MacFarlane can sing.
I know, but this is like crazy. But then Barry Manilow. Look at the people in here.
It's quite
Tony
a range.
Bennett, Bob Dylan, Josh Groban, Seth MacFarlane, and Barry Manilow.
Yeah, that's a big range. I agree. But if you were Seth MacFarlane and you saw your name among that list, wouldn't you go, seriously, really? How'd that happen? Tony Bennett.
I know, that is just crazy. He does have a good voice, though, Seth.
Seth MacFarlane has a great voice. It's shocking how good he can sing.
And you're expecting just dirty things to come out of his mouth. He's too dirty for me.
He's too dirty for you.
He really is. I swear to you. Yeah. I try to watch Family Guy and
too much
who's
for
the
you?
Other what's the other one?
American Dad.
Yeah, I just I watch the Cleveland Show every once in a while. Is that him?
Yeah, it is. So have you called your cable provider and complained about the content that Seth MacFarlane is providing?
Yeah, I said I only want him to sing. That's the only way I'll watch his stuff. I got to watch the Grammys, but I'm going to have to record them.
They'll allow that.
Best Contemporary Instrumental Album.
Who's up for that? That's always the most exciting one.
Snarky Puppy.
I'd like to see Snarky Puppy walk away with a trophy.
I'm a big fan. Foo Fighters. Oh, here we go. Best Rock Performance. Alabama Shakes.
Yeah.
Florence and the Machine. Foo Fighters.
Love the Foo Fighters.
They're excellent. L. King.
You know L. King. You know that song X's and O's?
I know that it says X's and O's, but I don't know
what
it
sounds.
X's
and O's is the song. She is the daughter of former Saturday Night Live cast member Rob Schneider.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, you told me about her.
And her mom is from here in Chicago, actually. I know friends of mine know her pretty well.
And Wolf Alice.
Yeah, Wolf Alice is from CNN. Wolf Alice does special reports.
Best rock song, Don't Want to Fight, Alabama Shakes, X's and O's.
Mm-hmm. Great song.
From El King.
Nice throwback song. You'd love it.
Hold Back the River, Ian Archer and James Bay. I am so unhip.
Mm-hmm.
Florence and the Machine, What Kind of Man? I don't know any of this. Death Cab for Cutie's up for Best Rock Album.
Those guys are good. I like
Muse,
them.
Muse, Slipknot.
Love Muse. I love those
and
guys.
Bjork up for Best Alternative Music Album.
She better win. I put money down on her every year.
What would her speech sound like? Come on.
Oh, I won! Uzi Lari,
it's a language that no one speaks but her. I know she's from Iceland, but in Iceland they're looking at each other going, what is she saying?
I hope she wins tonight just so we can hear her.
I hope so too.
Quick break, find out who's in for Roe, because I think it's Brian Noonan
again.
With Anna?
Yeah.
All right. Coming up next, 720 WGN.